Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, we have a cool topic. We're going to talk about American history through the lens of diversity. And I say a cool topic, and I guess it's not like super cool because American history isn't all like great as we, it's not the great country that we learned in elementary school, or not all the great country anyway. But Rochelle, can you talk a little bit about why you'd like to talk about this and sort of what we were going into before starting to record?
Excellent. I think that, first of all, I want our audience to know that this is not going to be just like one single talk, but probably a multi-part, multi-series part. American history is a very interesting thing. It's one of my favorite subjects. And if you think about America and the early parts of America, so the people that came here, they came here seeking freedom from various types of persecutions, whether it's religious or economic or whatever. They came here because they wanted freedom. And over the years, whether it was Spain or England or whatever, they were constantly sending, you know, ships and people here to explore and to find out what they could find. And, you know, sometimes they would succeed and sometimes they would fail, but they would come and go. And eventually they came and stayed. And as they came and stayed, they began to battle, if you will, for lack of a better word, with the indigenous people. So the people that were here when they came. And a lot of people think that America was founded by those people that came from other countries, but there were people here before. Yeah. And those people had lived on this land for hundreds of years as the land was, not building skyscrapers or, you know, all the things that other people did. They lived in harmony with the land. Yeah. And they were at peace with the land. And the people that came to America, the immigrants that came to America, saw the opportunity for America to be a capitalistic place, right? So we could make money here because it's underdeveloped. There, it's like some of the third world countries we think about now. That's what America was. It was a very underdeveloped country. But one of the interesting pieces about that was all the people that came to America early on were white, or at least they looked alike. Yeah. So they could not make them work the land. They could not make them grow the capitalistic society they wanted to grow. So indentured servitude did not work for early America because the people would run off, you know,
yeah.
They'd go out west or there was something somewhere else and they would run off, you know, and they weren't staying.
Lots of places to go in like newly settled America.
Right. And so, and the West wasn't fully developed. So what we had was really the North and the South. And, you know, there wasn't, you know, the America that we know now. It was a America that was slowly developing. Mm-hmm. And so as people who immigrated here saw opportunities to make money and to expand, you know, they saw the first place to make money was through agriculture, right? So growing crops and cattle and various things like that. And that was what they knew. Even in their own home countries, that was what they knew how to do. And so this was not a very friendly land. You know, the ground was dry. It hadn't been you know, tilled and fertilized in a way that would produce crops. So it took time to make the land produce. Yeah. And so they were struggling with it. And someone came up with an idea and said, hey, why don't we go get some people that do not look like us from someplace else? And that place turned out to be Africa. And at the time, Africa was being taken advantage of from a whole lot of places. So Africa, unlike any other part of the world, has everything, you know, so gold, diamonds, silver, ore, everything you could possibly want existed in Africa. And as countries were discovering this, they were going, because Africa was such an uneducated, undeveloped country, people were able to take advantage of them. So like De Beers went and got the first diamond rights in Africa and mined diamonds and made millions of diamonds and killed and mutilated Africans who tried to make money off their own property. But we have the rights, so you don't have a right to it. And so while people knew about Africa, it made sense that you would go to Africa and get these uneducated people and bring them to America to help grow this agriculture that would make people money.
Yeah.
And so this began the African slave trade. And what's really hard for some Black people to reconcile is, how would Africans sell Africans? Well, it's sort of like if you think about gangs today in America, or gangs anywhere.
Yeah.
Not everybody in Africa loved each other. There was no kumbaya. There was no harmony between. So it was easy. So if you were in a warring tribe or area, you know, and if you didn't like the people across the neighborhood, you know, and somebody said, hey, I'll give you pence for these people, you captured them and sold them.
I didn't even know that was a thing in the slave trade. That I always imagined just like Europeans going, or newly formed Americans going over there and like more or less like kidnapping people. I didn't realize that there was, you know, actual trading in the continent there.
Absolutely. I'm sure there was some small kidnapping, but considering the size of Africa and, you know, I don't care where you were coming from in the world, you would not freely travel through Africa and kidnap people without experiencing some harm to yourself. So slave trading was a thing, and it was that there were people who were willing to sell their countrymen for money, because they were not aligned with those countrymen. So, you know, if you were from, say, Nigeria, Senegal, or, you know, wherever you were from, Ghana, and you were not in aligned with each other, you know, you would be willing to sell, you know, your countrymen for some wage. Yeah. Now, it's been documented over and over again. They had no idea what they were selling these people into. They did not know what would come to them. I mean, I think everything we have seen to date suggests that if they knew what slavery looked like, they would have never sold those people into slavery. Yeah. The ship ride, you know, from Africa to America, you know, the health of African Americans today, you know, is in large measure tied to that ship ride. You know, to ride in the bottom of a boat that's sitting in salt water for however hundreds of miles, high blood pressure, you know, all kinds of other things, you know, then to be put out in the sun to toil in the field for hours and hours to eat whatever's left over, to eat very little, you know, to reshape your muscle mass and your bone structure and your body, you know, all of these things happen.
Yeah.
And somewhere along the line, and if you go back, step back to the indigenous people. So, you know, think about that for a minute. So here were these people who had lived on this land forever. And when these people came, they found that they could not convert them to Christianity. They could not convert them to their way of thinking. So those that they did not kill, they captured and marched off to the Trail of Tears. Yeah. And if you think about that in a lot of ways, the dislike, and I don't know what the logic is, the ideology of why, you know, they did this to the Native Americans, the indigenous people, but to have done that to these people, you could not expect anything to do them to them to do anything less to the slaves, except for they couldn't march them off to a camp or, you know, destroy them, because they needed them to help them with the economics. You know,
yeah.
When you think about Duke University, Duke University is built on tobacco. Tobacco was built on the back of slaves. So, you know, every single thing that you can look at in the early part of America was built on the back of slaves, enslaved people. And so when you think about capitalism in the way that it works today, and hate and discrimination and all of these things, the logic of it is so flawed. It's kind of hard to think through. So like, why would I hate someone because of something that is unknown? And there's a book, it was written many years ago. I can't remember who wrote it. And it talks a little bit about white men and black men. And it talks a little bit about why there is animus between the two groups, right? So black men bodies are stronger, if you will. The structure of the body, the way they carry themselves, they're, you know, yield some dislike. And so because, and I don't know if any of this is true, this was in this book, the spirit of the black man was never broken. Even when they were being lynched or hung or beaten or whatever was done, their spirit wasn't broken. And that led to increased hate and dislike between the two groups. And so to constantly reaffirm to themselves that black was bad, everything about black was bad, like black men were evil, because I can't break your spirit, I can't tear you down. Whereas normal people, and I don't know what normal people is, but normal, you can break a person, you can pull a person down. Whereas black people at that time were able to sustain themselves through all the hardship that happened. You know, like we weren't allowed to read and write, we weren't allowed to have our own family, we weren't allowed to have anything, but somehow or another we survived enough to get out of slavery, to fight for, you know, we read in secret, we created songs that told stories about escaping, you know, we swam through waters that were snake and alligator, you know, all of this, you know, no other group of people had overcome so much to get to where black people are. And we still are far, far behind. But even to this very day, we are hated for a reason that is beyond logic. You know, we are described as not being smart. We are described as not being, you know, moral. You know, that we are sex pots, that we are crooks and robbers and thieves and all of these other things, that we are all of these things that someone supposes about us without ever having any evidence. So there is a book that was written in the 60s or 70s called The Bell Curve. And it says that we were dumb. This researcher said that we were dumb. And to this very day, Apple, Google, Microsoft, whoever the company is, Duke, whoever it is, believes that book, that we are dumb. It's why black people are not leaders. It's why we don't have a black person as the president. It's why we don't have black people in senior leadership roles. Black women were described as promiscuous. We would sleep with anybody. You know, we were just whores and you know, transit. So we would do this. And all of these things in our history continue to proliferate through our history. You know, and if you go on LinkedIn or any of these things, you know, it's wonderful to see. I've just got this great job at such and such and such. This black person posted. And it's almost heartbreaking to see it, because why is it necessary? Why do people don't post things like that? Because there's no need to post. There's no need to tell that. But that our achievements require us to announce it. In the year that COVID started. So I'll use myself as an example and some of the other people. So in the midst of a pandemic, I lost my job. I don't know how many admins at Duke, Black admins, essential workers, lost their jobs, Black people.
Yeah.
In the middle of that, Black people were essential workers, which means they had to go to work. They couldn't work from home. They couldn't work remotely. I would guess that if we were to look at each other, so put Drew and Rochelle side by side, the chances of you ever being career insecure are probably never, but I am. But why? Because someone has decided something about me and painted me somewhere and said something about me that makes me this person that society believes I am, that may or may not be true. And that is the plight of Black people. So history, historically, so going back to slavery, so, you know, like food that we eat. So if you ask about typical food, right? So fried chicken, almost everybody, I believe, only Black people eat fried chicken.
That's fried chicken.
It's a ridiculousness, fried chicken, watermelon. Black people, only Black people eat watermelon, right? You know, you've got all of these stereotypical things. Now, what's really interesting about that is that back in the day, we did eat that because that was all we had to eat was fried chicken. Yeah. So white people had their chicken roasted or baked or grilled or something. And so all we had was the leftover. So, you know, the chicken butt, the chicken wings, the chicken, whatever the bad parts of the chicken. Now, chicken wings are like a delicacy. Everybody wants chicken wings, but that was all we had. Watermelons, you know, watermelon was the throwaway fruit. The cantaloupe and the honeydew melon, those were the, you know, so historically, when you look at these things, we were left with what was left over. But the way the narrative is told, we're the only people that eat those foods. You know, when Tiger Woods won the Masters, Fuzzy said, you know, we'll have fried chicken and collard greens at the ceremony. You know, it's like, okay, you know, because that's the narrative, because that's what people believe, is that that's what we eat. You know, I eat everything that everybody else eats. You know, fried chicken is probably the least thing that I eat. I love watermelon. I love all fruits, but, you know, but just to assign that to me as a Black person food is a disservice. Yeah. You know, to talk about Black men in some kind of way, like what a Black man is. You know, I posted something on LinkedIn about a month or so ago. You know, there is something about the way a Black man walks. And I think,
excuse me.
God bless you.
Thank you.
I think it's a flaw in the body. I don't think it's something about what's happened to him over the years. But a Black man has what we call a pimp. It's almost like a little step. I don't know. And it's something about that that is so attractive to see the walk, because it's like it makes his gait different from other men's gait, you know. So like, you know, it's why I guess he has rhythm. You know, I have no rhythm, but it's why he has rhythm. It's something about what structurally must have happened to him over time, because looking at a Black man and an African man walk, the gait is totally different, you know. So the swag, if you will, and I don't even know what that means, but the way a Black man carries himself, even when he is at his worst, at his lowest, whatever it is, like, doesn't have any money, doesn't have a job, doesn't have anything to eat, whatever it is, you would never know it, because that showing that fear would reinforce what people already think about him. So never let that show. And the question becomes, is here we are in 2021, why do we still live in this space with these same ideologies and these same practices? Why is discrimination and racism and violence still there? Why is it that a police officer thinks that, you know, killing a Black man that's in handcuffs is a reasonable thing to do as opposed to saving? You know, why is it that we hate people that are different from us? You know, and in a lot of ways, this translates into the LGBTQ people. I mean, you know, their community struggles with this, you know, and in some ways women struggle with this. You know, we have some kind of thing that we feel about women. you know, and it's just one of these things about society. Is it simply that someone must be better than someone else, or is it something else?
Yeah, that's it's such a weird, like, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things. It's hard to empathize with people that hate other people in that way. Like, it's hard to sort of put yourself in the shoes of, like, why would somebody hate someone else because of their race or their gender or their, like, sexuality? Like, does it just come from something that's been passed down since, like, the slavery times, where people think, oh, well, you know, my parents acted like that and their parents acted like that, so I should act like that? Or it seems like we should be like, I understand that we aren't beyond that, but I don't know of the excuse of why there are still people that think that.
We teach it very early on, and we teach it in subtle ways, right? You know, if you think about this, you know, even looking at your home, like, when your child was young, you know, did you invite your child to play or to interact with people that were different? And I would say probably not, because it wasn't something that you knew to do. You know, we teach what we know, right? So I grew up, my mother who raised me was a domestic, right? She cooked and cleaned for a Jewish family. So I knew to play with white kids. I played with white kids all the time. We ate off each other's plates. We did each other's hair. It didn't occur to me that there was a difference until they reminded me that I was different. And, you know, when I was probably 7 or 8 years old, the little girl said, oh, no, you are in. And so when she said that, I didn't even know what that meant. Yeah. And so my mother explained to me what an in was. And she said, all Black people are in. She believed it too. She believed that being an in was a bad thing. And she explained to me that ins were lower forms of society. So when you believe it and is preached and taught over and over and over and over again. So when you think about Alabama, segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever, taught it over and over and again. Everybody believed it. When you look at our legislators, when you look at our presidents, when you look at our leaders, when you look anywhere around you, the majority of people are white and male, because we are taught that is better. That is best. It's best that a white. So think about the 2016 election.
Yeah.
So the argument about Hillary was Benghazi. I believe 4 people died in Benghazi. I don't remember all the details about it, but that was used to make her look awful. Now, you know, I don't know how I feel about Hillary, but I really wanted to see a woman president in my lifetime. I wanted that so bad. But we are told that women are emotional. We are unstable. You know, we tend to be, you know, hyperbolic. You know, we tend to be all over the place. You know, we tend to, you know, be frazzled. You know, we tend to be unable to control ourselves at times, you know. So a woman with the codes means that we might launch a missile and start World War III. The idiot that was the president, I don't know anybody more unfrazzled and more erratic than him in the entire presidential lineup. And there have been some crackpots that's been president. Oh,
yeah. But when you were describing those things, it's like all those things, I know what you mean. Like, they're all described about Hillary or women. And it's like, well, that's like, those are all like human traits that some people have and some people don't have. Like, none of it, it's not strictly men or women or a specific person. Well, they may all be our last president, but in general, they aren't usually like all just the definition of one person.
Right. But typically, so she couldn't be president because she would put us at risk. You know, the fact that we have a vice president that's a woman, you know. The prayer is, and I've heard it so many times, is that nothing happens to Biden. He's old. You know, if he were to die, she might become president. And she has all of those attributes that make her, you know, dangerous. But in reality, you know, all of us come from a woman, which mm-hmm. means we bear some of the traits of a woman. But I guess our logic is, as a man, we stabilize those traits in ourselves, so we don't allow ourselves to be overly emotional. And I'll give you a good example of that. When I tell my husband I want to talk, you can see his eyes roll into the back of his head. You see a little bit of smoke come out of his ears. You know, his whole facial structure changes. And all I want to ask is, what are we having for dinner? But his mind goes to, oh my God, what have I done now? Yeah. That's the thought about what a woman is, right? So, you know, what is it that she's going to say or do now? And that mentality about women is exactly the same mentality that exists about Black people, brown people, you know, your sexual orientation, whatever it is. People have this preconceived notion about this. So, you know, my husband, you know, we've been married for a long time. So I guess he knows that there are times when I talk to him, he thinks, oh my God, this is going to be for hours. We're going to be talking for hours about something I don't want to talk about. We're going to be just talking about this. And, you know, all I'm going to say is, yes, dear, yes, dear, yes, dear. And then it's going to go away. And then, you know, it'll be gone for a few months and it'll come back around again. So I intentionally, you know, I'll send him a text message, do you have a few minutes to talk? And, you know, and I know exactly what's going to happen, right? He's going to go into that place where he goes, oh my God, here it comes. What did I do today? Did I remember to take the trash out? Did I put the toilet seat down?
And I feel the same way a lot of times. I see that and I'm like, uh-oh, what has happened? I'm sure I've done something. What was it?
But that type, you know, that's an unfortunate thing. And that's how we get to believe things about people that are not true. We get to believe, you know, these things. And I mean, of course, as a woman, I guess my husband would say that there are times I can nag him, but I could say the same thing about my husband, you know, so he'll get himself together to do something and he forgets, his entire brain walks out of his head. You know, he forgets to lock the door. You know, it's just, I don't know. I can't even begin to describe it. But nonetheless, when we stereotype or we allow ourselves to believe things about people that are not true, and then we hold tight to those things. So when your wife says, Drew, I want to talk later, you know, and your mind goes to that place where you go, you know, oh my God, what did I do? That's the stereotype. And that's what happens to Black people and brown people and to women and all the other people, because people want to believe something that may or may not be true, as opposed to saying, oh, my wife just wants to tell me she loves me and what a good job I did on raking the yard or whatever I did, or cooking dinner or something. We don't allow ourselves, because we have been taught, either through experiences, lived experiences, or through things that have been passed down from years and years, oh my God, this is going to be painful. Because, you know, I'm sure my father-in-law told my husband, you know, like, when your wife wants to talk, make sure you say yes, dear, to everything she says, and make sure you make eye contact and you nod when she's talking. Yeah. That's not good. That's not good. I didn't teach my son that. I taught my son to have an opinion, to talk, to engage, to ask, you know, like, you know, what do you want to talk about? I want to talk, you know, so you ask, you know, you send her a text message, say, hey, I want to talk.
Yeah.
Turn the tables, because if you do that, you break the mold of what people think, you know, so, you know, you ask, dear, I want to talk. And, you know, have a stern talk tone when you ask, you know. Make her be afraid that you go, oh, what did I do today? You know, did I remember to put the toilet seat up? You know.
Thank you for listening to Eminent Teachnology. If you like the show, please review, subscribe, and recommend us to your friends and family. We'd love to hear feedback from you as well. You can email us at eminentteachnology@gmail.com. See y'all soon.